Now that it's the...
So, not everywhere, but at least in Washington State, there is a name for hate.
Is there now?
Yes. Well, at least a legislative name for hate, if you will. And it is, I believe, Referendum 74?
Yeah, if you haven't been paying attention, the forces of homophobia, of organized homophobia anyways, are working to repeal the recently passed same-sex marriage bill that was signed by our governor just last week.
Yeah.
And they're doing it by referendum, where if you get enough people angry enough in the next, I believe, 90 days, and you get enough people to give, I believe, about 125,000 good signatures across the state, then civil rights will be a popular vote.
Yeah.
So,
which is very odd. It was not something... I know everybody likes to talk about the framers as if they were the messiah of America, but it was never... It was the whole point of inalienable rights is it's not something that's popularly voted on. I understand that the legislative process is how we get... is how, you know, we fix these inequities, but putting it to a popular vote wasn't really the idea.
Yeah, I'm fine with having these sorts of battles about your preferred economic system.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But when you start saying that this or that group of people don't have a group of rights based on the fact that they're a smaller group and less politically powerful or less popular, that's just out of bounds. So if you see one of these guys with a clipboard, don't sign it.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam. With me today is Mike.
Hey.
And for the first time on this side of the microphone, Darren, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. You know, sometimes I feel it necessary to remind people, you know, why we talk about this, because it's not something specifically having to do with atheism. But it's a conversation we've been having on the show since the very early days about how we should feel about, you know, civil rights for everybody, marriage equality, that sort of thing. And it became clear to us through our conversations that every time somebody talks about gay marriage and why it shouldn't be allowed, they're speaking from a religious basis.
Yeah, and exclusively a religious basis, too, that I've never seen a debate that is more driven by somebody's perceived religious privilege, their ability, their perceived ability, or their wishful ability, or their historic ability to tell other people what to do, yet act victimized when the playing field is leveled, where suddenly, no, you can't tell someone what to do. You can only tell yourself what to do.
It's a very dangerous psychological concept. Victims from the position of privilege. They act as if they're victimized, but they have privileges that those of us who do not agree with them do not have.
Yeah, when you're a person who is used to getting everything your way, and then suddenly, and that getting everything your way means getting to tell other people what to do.
Yeah.
That my religion gets to set the rules for, you know, who's allowed to marry who, who's allowed to get what medical procedure, who's allowed to say what prayer in a city council meeting. When I'm used to getting my way for a long time, and now suddenly I have to either give that up or share that with other people, that's not persecution. When you have people whining about how the president in his speech after some disaster is not kissing up to your God enough,
right?
I would love to trade for that problem.
So, actually, right out of the gate, we have a call. Why don't we take this? This is Maria from Colorado, and she's got a problem with us. How you doing today, Maria?
I don't have a problem.
All right.
Well, what do you have?
Well, I just found out about your show, so I thought, Okay, I would stand that. Okay, well, you know, we have about 6,000 years of recorded history. You know, we have documents.
We have a lot more than just 6,000.
Well, come on, give or take 5,000, okay?
Yeah, we can call it 6,000 years of literate history. I'm willing to go with that.
Okay. And during that time, it's always been a God-thinking world, okay? The world thinks God. Okay, also...
That's not entirely true, but it has been majority... There has been a very majority religious.
Well, you know, the strongest survive. So God thinkers have survived, but another point that will go with that point.
What point
here's
is that?
My,
that one side has swords and the other side gets stuck with them?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you said the strongest survive, and honestly,
well, yeah,
the reason that...
The strongest thinkers have survived, because that's why it's a God-thinking world today, because the strongest thinkers have survived.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I'd say that there's a...
Go ahead.
I wouldn't say that's the strongest thinker, that you have one person on one side that says, I'm going to withhold belief until adequate evidence is produced, and the other person who says, I'm going to make an assumption about something based on a really, really old book that talks about magic. I wouldn't say that the latter is the strongest thinking.
Look, nobody's ever said this. I didn't read it anywhere. This is my own belief and take on the Bible, okay?
Mm.
Since I've studied it. Now, I like Darwin. I've studied Darwin. I really found him interesting. He is interesting, Darwin. And it's amazing when he went to Galapagos and God showed him what was really happening, okay? So Darwin got, and I believe atheists got their gung-ho from Darwin. They went gung-ho after Darwin. And also because Christians have recently taken him to task, you know, with the debates of, you know, Kirk Cameron and all them that debate the atheists.
Right.
Okay, now.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, no. Darwin was not wrong. I mean, Darwin did not suddenly see all this happening, all the life on Galapagos, on his own. God was showing Darwin this.
And why did you're saying that you're making an assumption and throwing something into the mix that you're going to have to prove? What evidence do you have that God is necessary to tell this story?
Evidence. And because God did not leave himself without witnesses, he said, "You shall be witnesses unto me in all the world, beginning in Jerusalem." And so I'm one.
Right? Yeah, to propagate the idea. I get that. Every religion says that it's the propagation of ideas,
well, would,
it's the propagation of social control.
That's why I have a hard time talking with atheists, because they start to get angry. I'm not here to argue with you. On Galapagos, let me tell you what happened.
Maria?
On Galapagos, Darwin saw what was really happening, because in the beginning, when God created everything, okay, he told them first people, you know, he said, he didn't give them a free will. I don't believe this free will stuff. He gave them a clear commandment. See all those trees, you can eat all of them, but don't eat from the one in the middle of the garden.
Okay, this is all stuff that we've heard, Maria.
Maria, ultimately, what
can you wrap it up? We're all familiar with the story of Genesis.
If you'll let me talk.
I've let you talk for quite a bit.
I'll wrap it up. Okay, so they said no. So God said, okay, have it your way. You will evolve. So man evolved. Man evolved because of sin in the world. That's why man is exactly.
Okay, Maria, we've heard this a lot. And here's the thing: is the you've kind of drifted from here. Originally, you were telling us about how people who believed in God have survived for 6,000 years, and for 6,000 years, the world has been God believed in God. But let me tell you. You say that atheists became gung ho because of Charles Darwin. I disagree. I actually think that. We became gung-ho, and we became what we are today because of the Enlightenment. And Charles Darwin was sort of a part of that. We have the Industrial Revolution, we have the Scientific Revolution. We've been walking out of the darkness that was basically codified by religion as we learn about the world around us. I will agree with you that in ancient times, it may have been better to be part of a group that believes versus part of a group that didn't, because there wasn't necessarily anything better. But today is a different day. Today we have science. Today we have understanding. Today we have testable, provable things.
Yeah, but you don't have anything that can disprove the Bible, because I believe in evolution myself, and I'm a Christian.
No, Maria, you're getting it backwards. It's not about, oh, you can't disprove this. It's a question of what you can prove. The burden of proof is not on the skeptic. The burden of proof. Oh, are you still talking? The burden of proof is not on the skeptic. The burden on the proof is on the person who's making the positive claim. And if the positive claim are all of these assumptions you're making about this Garden of Eden Genesis story, then you're going to have to prove that, not simply put it out there as an assumption and build things on it. If we're going to have an argument, you need to have a common set of provable facts to build as a foundation of that argument. And if you're going to build it on stuff that you're going to make as assumptions, and then put assumptions on top of that, and assumptions on top of that...
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls.
What about the Dead Sea Scrolls?
The Dead Sea
Scrolls...
They're
authentic.
They're really old religious writing with more scripture on them.
Right.
This doesn't prove that the supernatural claims in that scripture is true.
Yeah, but life proves it. I mean, if you...
How does life prove the supernatural claim?
Your life will be as it says.
That,
we really do reap what we sow. The laws that govern the universe that God set in motion really do operate the way he said. And that's in the Bible.
Not necessarily true. We've done several episodes about biblical contradictions, about things that are in the Bible that don't exist.
I heard you guys talking about some child that died because their parents believed in faith healing. You can't take one isolated case or maybe a few.
It's not
isolated cases. These are things which happen repeatedly throughout history. This is repeatedly in America is that people are denying. There are whole religions based on this idea that God can pray the disease away, where really we have things that prove people continue to live, they don't die.
And the fact that this one church in Oregon, this was not the first time this happened.
Well,
this happened several times before they passed a law.
People do the same thing.
What?
They make mistakes.
Yeah, people make mistakes, but these are mistakes built upon a preposition that these religious beliefs are true.
We don't blame all of Christianity. We blame the people who believe that faith healing can be used in place.
So if Jeffrey Dahmer kills all those people, so I'm going to blame every middle-class kid that's raised middle-class
No.
That's your supposition. That's not mine. I'm saying, I don't think you're listening to me. I'm saying I'm not blaming Christianity as a whole. I'm blaming the people who believe in this claptrap. I'm capable of understanding that is a subset of all Christians.
But everybody with common sense knows that's wrong.
Maria. Common sense is not an argument.
That's clearly not true. Otherwise, these people wouldn't be killing their children.
What people?
These people who believe in faith healing instead of seeking medical attention for curable diseases.
Okay, what about these people that keep their children chained and like they in basements and starve them?
They are also bad.
Religious.
Some of them are religious, actually.
Many of them are religious.
Now Christianity.
One of the most egregious modern cases of that, Joseph Fritzl, was very religious.
This happens in the secular world, not just among Christians or so-called Christians.
See, that right there, that's called moving the goalpost, Maria, when you start saying things like so-called Christians. Either somebody is a Christian or they're not, and I tend to use a very broad definition for what I consider a Christian. A Christian is someone who believes in the divinity of Jesus Christ. And as soon as you start putting, that person's not a real Christian, as soon as they do something embarrassing, that's not an argument. There are atheists who do bad things. There are Christians who do bad things. It's not about just lining up all the people in one camp and saying, all atheism is blamed for this number of atheists who do bad things. This amount of Christianity is all to blame for that. For instance, what's his name? The Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh, was a Christian. But based on his own testimony, based on stuff he's written, based on stuff he said, Christianity had very little to do with his crime. So I'm not going to say Christianity is to blame for Oklahoma City. I'm going to blame religion for the things that are explicitly done for religious reasons. And in the case of those faith healers in Oregon, those were done explicitly for religious reasons.
Okay, if we're not supposed to blame the people who kill their children because they believe in faith healing, who exactly is to blame? Yeah, that's the problem.
They are. I didn't say they weren't to blame. They are to blame, just like a secular doctor who doesn't believe in God. It makes a mistake and kills a patient.
The difference here, Maria, you just said mistake. This is intentional.
Yeah, this is an intentional thing. A doctor makes a mistake. A doctor makes a mistake. These faith healers, these faith healers are doing everything exactly right. They are following the script. They are doing everything they are supposed to be doing, and these kids still die. That's the difference.
No, these people are mentally ill. You cannot call them Christians.
I agree that they're mentally ill, but it does not take away their responsibility for what they do. They still have to answer for what happens, and faith healing is still the cause.
Look, Andrea, no, it isn't. That's what you know what?
When, Maria.
Then what about people like me and others like me that don't do stuff like that?
We're not saying that every Christian does this. We have never said that every Christian does this. We are never going to say that every Christian does this.
And we have said as much three times during the course of this call.
But we are saying,
are you willing to stipulate that we do not believe that the entirety of Christianity is responsible for a group of faith healers? Do you understand that we agree?
It's obvious.
I understand that it's obvious, but do you see that we see that it's obvious?
Yeah, but then why do you have this program?
All right. I
because of misunderstandings like yours.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Maria. No, really, thank you, Maria. But clearly, she's not interested in having a conversation. She just wants to tell us that we're wrong about everything.
And preach at us.
Yeah. And, well, you know, we gave her her chance, and it didn't go quite as well as we want. And that was a bit longer than I thought.
It felt long.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We do have a topic, but there are calls. So let's go into the break, and we'll take another call when we get back. And then hopefully we'll get to the topic.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Come to this year's Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference, March 30th through April 1st at Renton Technical College in Renton, Washington. Speaking at the conference is Richard Dawkins, Professor Emeritus of Biology at Oxford, author of many books including The Magic of Reality, and well-known to the atheist community as one of the Four Horsemen. Also speaking is friend of the show and author of Attack of the Theocrats, Sean Faircloth. The cast of Ask an Atheist will be making an appearance and recording an episode in front of a live audience. For more information, visit nwfreethoughtalliance.org.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas freely.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Well, it's a busy day here in Lakewood on Clay 1180 AM, eh?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of crazy in the air.
Maybe, but I don't think the next one. We've got Steve from St. Louis on the line. Wants to talk about how we opened the show. How you doing today, Steve?
Oh, pretty good.
Cool.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for both doing a great job and the fact that after listening to the last caller while I've been waiting for this, it's like you are far more patient than I am.
Well, we try to give as good as we get, and when it became clear that she wasn't going to concede even exactly what we said 2 seconds ago, you know, there's no reason to continue.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to talk because I found a lot of your conversations, especially the last few weeks, really interesting, and that I find it, I'm both gay and atheist, and I find it strange that when I first came out as an atheist was like 40 years ago, I was 15 at the time, and it took me a few years later to be accept being gay and come out again as gay and all that. And I find it strange that nowadays it seems like it's easier to come out as gay than as atheist, while when I was growing up it was basically the opposite. I don't know what that says about our country, but...
I get the impression that's probably a lot to do with the really hard work and decades of activism and education by the gay rights community, who have been really, really good at not only educating a public about how gay people aren't going to, you know, rip your soul out, but providing people who do run into that kind of negativity when they come out, giving them, you know, sort of shelter in a community that can let them know that they're not alone.
This is the success of civil movements is what we're looking at. That's sort of my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that basically you guys are going along the right way and everything like that. I guess I don't really have a whole lot to contribute to the conversation other than the fact that from my own perspective, I do understand what you say about coming out as an atheist. Until you actually said it that way, I never had really thought of it that way, because I've been pretty much an atheist my whole life, and, you know, I've never really thought of coming out as atheist as much about coming out as being gay. And it's like my family knows both, and they pretty much accepted me, for both. Although I'll have to admit, it's like I've got a pretty accepting family, so I'm pretty lucky in that respect.
You really are, and it's actually what you're saying is really compelling to me. And I didn't really understand the coming out aspect of it either. I mean, I grew up, in a family that was at least agnostic, and it wasn't until I started in on my activism a few years ago when I started hearing the stories of other people and the trials and travails they had to go through to be socially accepted as an atheist that the coming out paradigm made sense to me. Before that, people would say it, and I'm like, I don't really like the use of that term. I started out being on sort of the other side of that debate, saying we shouldn't use that phrase. It means something very specific. We're using it in a different way. And then I met people who had these stories, these problems, and I started changing my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I really, like I said, I don't have a whole lot else to contribute. Just wanted to give you a little, like maybe a little positive reinforcement.
Thank you very much.
Keep up the great work. I listen to your, download your podcast every week, and I just happen to be at home and online when I know, hey, that's right, you guys are actually on, so I figured I'd give you a call, and just thanks for doing great work.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a good day.
You too.
Yeah, for me, coming from a religious family, I'm sure that my family would much rather I be homosexual than an atheist.
Really? Why do you think that? What do you think that to be somehow less nasty about that?
Because as I believe my family would still think that I could get into heaven.
Right. Whereas, it's a sin, but you're absolved of sin by God, so it's okay anyway. Whereas if you're an unbeliever, you're consigned to it at the very least. The
it's
other
a sure
darkness.
Deal.
Yeah.
Isn't that the one unpardonable sin? Denouncing the Holy Spirit?
Denouncing the Holy Spirit or blaspheming the Holy Spirit, which was the blasphemy challenge back in 2006, 2007. So we have one more call. This is Josh from Tacoma, and he wants to talk about the implications of the non-existence or existence of God. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Great. What do you got for us?
I was going to ask you, being atheist, whether or not you believe in the existence of the soul.
I do not. How about you?
I don't either. I think that that my consciousness is attached to my brain, and I don't think that me goes anywhere after I die or was anywhere before I was born.
Yeah, pretty strict monists here.
And there's no evidence to support a soul, so no.
I'm not... go on.
Arguably there isn't, but what about... are you determinist?
No, I'm not, at least. I think that there's a lot of scientific and psychological debate over this question of free will.
Yeah.
I like the definition of free will that Daniel Dennett had, where he said that free will is the ability to veto your impulses and veto the veto. And that's one that I like. And I've been in scenarios where I have very strongly wanted to do something and have stopped myself from doing it. Usually this involves spending money on eBay. And I know...
There's a part of the brain that does it?
Yeah, I mean, I would allocate anything that involves decision-making or feeling or anything to impulses hitting the brain.
Reason is generally constrained to the forebrain, the part closest to your forehead, but it's actually a process that uses...
Yeah, the prefrontal cortex.
Right. It also uses other parts of the brain as well. It's not necessarily a localized phenomenon inside the brain.
Of course not.
I think also the example of Phineas Gage is a really good example of somebody who, when their brain is injured, they completely change their personality. I think that it's not a debunking of the idea that there's this you that's separate from your body, but I think when we've seen so many examples of people whose brain have been injured becoming a completely different person, I think it plays to the fact that there is a strong connection.
Phineas Gage is a very famous psychological experiment in the 19th century. Well, not psychological phenomenon, I guess, in the 19th century, where the patient received a railroad spike through the forehead and destroyed damaged his prefrontal cortex, and his decision-making processes were incredibly changed thereby. And many atheists believe that this is weak evidence against the idea of a soul which is external to the anatomy of the body.
Well, there is another prominent psychologist in the 19th century named Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Yes.
He's a novelist and one of the fathers of psychology. He himself was a Christian.
Yes.
And one of his arguments for Christianity was that it was... Well, not Christianity particularly, but that was his religion. But the existence of God was necessary to separate human beings from animals. And I read somewhere else that the only real difference between human beings and animals is the fact that we think that we need to be separated by them somehow.
I think that's a really good point. And as somebody, I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but I've taken a number of anthropology classes, including one where I did ape observation. And the thing that I've really noticed from just reading about ape behavior and ape thinking and apes that are able to converse with us through sign language is that it's a much grayer area separating us from other living things on Earth. I mean, I've seen experiments that show that chimpanzees have a certain sense of fairness.
Yeah.
Anyone who's owned more than one dog has seen these battles play out.
I find
out.
It interesting that you like the apes for the same reason I dislike the apes. They are too much like us.
I'm fascinated
by
that.
They do have thumbs on their feet, which... is a big, that kind of gets me.
Yeah.
Thumbs on the feet.
Wouldn't mind that.
I would love to have detached, desperate, prehensile toes. That would be great.
So, yeah, that's kind of where we stand. I don't believe in the existence of the soul, and I don't really believe in anything that specifically separates us from, from the animals other than our decision-making processes and, I guess, our penchant for speaking and technology, but only just.
Only just. It's really a matter of degree rather than type.
Yeah.
So, human society has a lot to do with helping each other and being altruistic,
right,
to help the whole rather than the individual. So it's kind of a hive mind thing, but the fact that we're naturally selfish, I think, is a good, reason to have religion in your life, to give you some kind of either real or imaginary incentive.
I tend to disagree there. I mean, we're not hive minds. We're not eusocial. There is a lot of examples of charity or basically in the animal kingdom. But what we have, we're not eusocial. We're tribal. And we like being in groups, and we're sort of wired for it. But we're not; it's not the same thing as we would die if we weren't in this hive. And I think that in and of itself is a good reason to be in favor of societies and working in a group and working together. We don't need to invent things to be fans of working in a community. I think working in a community, working together, helping people out, it can really be a means and an end. I feel better when I help people out. I like helping people out. I like it when people help me out. That could be reason for me, and for many humanists, that is reason enough to continue this thing we call society.
I also think the other thing with working in a society is you have the ability to specialize, that I don't have to hunt my own food, and I don't have to produce my own food, or often even cook my own food. There are other people who do that, and they give me the freedom to do other things, and because we all sort of work collectively in certain ways, we're able to all succeed more. I'm glad that somebody like, say, Steve Jobs didn't have to spend time hunting mammoths and was instead able to create something that he would not have been able to do if he also had to farm and do all this other stuff that you would have to do to be completely self-autonomous.
All right, Steve, we're going to... Or, not Steve. This is Josh. Josh, thank you for your call. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think that's it for now.
All right, look forward to talking to you again. Catch you next time. That was a nice disagreeing call. I like that we have this agreement and disagreement. And
he didn't speak kindly of Kirk Cameron either.
No, and he did not. Yeah, there was no... But, you know, I look forward to another call, Josh. Thank you. We got a couple of announcements. The first one is this... Coming very soon, March 30th to April 1st, there will be the Northwest Freethought Alliance annual conference, and it will be featuring somebody who's been on the show, Sean Faircloth, Richard Dawkins, who I'm pretty sure you're all familiar with by now, and strangely, the cast and crew of Ask an Atheist will be performing a live show. Again, that's March 30th and through April 1st. You can go to nwfreethoughtalliance.org for more information. Also, those of you who might be familiar with an episode we did, I believe, back in October about the American Cancer Society, the Todd Stiefel Foundation, and Foundation Beyond Belief, trying to give money to cancer organizations, well, they have an alternate donation drive now. They have an organization they're going to be giving money to. The Foundation Beyond Belief is proud to announce that they are now a special friend team partner with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society for their Light of the Night walks. They will be a rallying point around which freethought, atheist, and secular humanist groups will form teams to participate in Light of the Night walks. They're hoping to raise $1 million, and you can find more information at foundationbeyondbelief.org. I encourage everybody to participate in this, because this is exactly what it's going to take for people to understand that atheists want to be, and humanists and free thinkers want to be a part of society and do give to charity and do help out in ways that we are not normally seen, because we don't have a church telling everybody how awesome we are.
Absolutely. It's really this weird catch-22 that I think religious people like to catch us in, that we give to charity but don't trumpet our atheism while doing so. And we're saying, oh, well, we're all the atheists. And then the minute we organize to say, okay, you know what? We deserve to get a little bit of credit here.
But
And they call us names and say, oh, you're just doing this to get attention.
And they try and cut us out of the herd, which is what the American Cancer Society did. If you haven't heard, I encourage you to check that episode out. Speaking of churches, today we kind of have a newly minted expert of church going here in the room.
Yeah, Darren. Darren is, you may know, if you've ever called into our show, 9 times out of 10, you're going to speak to Darren as our call screener. Darren's been doing something every week that I know that he's been telling us about for a long time. Sam and I have been saying, we got to talk about this on the show.
Yeah.
And we said, finally, let's drag Darren into the room with us and get him to talk about it. Now, Darren, you've been going to church every week, haven't you?
Yes, every week that I can make it in, for the last 3 or 4 months.
Now, I got to ask, though. You mean you're an atheist, right?
Indeed.
So,
in fact, he comes... Church happens on Sunday, usually. I mean, I've been out of it for a while, but it still happens on Sunday, right?
Yeah, a lot of it does.
So you go to church, mm-hmm. you get a load of that, and then you come here and get a load of this, is basically how it's been working out?
Yes, that is pretty accurate.
Sort of like a chaser after a strong drink.
Okay.
So I got to ask, Darren, this is the big question. This is the thing everyone at home is wondering right now. Why the hell do you do this?
Well, I've been studying religion quite a bit for the last few years, and I've just decided that I really wanted to observe religious people in their natural environment and, to get an understanding of where they're coming from, not just... talking about it with atheists.
So it's a bit like the Galapagos Islands. You're out there with your notebook and doing observations of the population.
I do have a notebook with me. And I also just enjoy the whole show that they put on. I enjoy watching people who believe that magic is happening there. I enjoy people speaking in tongues. I enjoy faith healing, anything where there's some, the people are living in a universe that has, you know, these magical qualities in it.
So you say you like it, you like being in a place where people believe magic is happening. Have you ever been to like a stage magician show, like Penn and Teller or anything like that?
No, but I would enjoy that, too, yeah.
Okay, I was wondering if it's remarkably similar. Maybe not Penn and Teller, since they like to give away the joke, but I do sort of wonder if the same sort of feeling of magic in the air is similar between a stage show and going to church.
I also go to meetings of, like, ghost hunters and, you know, just things like that that I also don't believe in.
Actually,
and it's the same feeling.
I did notice that there was a occult research group in Olympia that you recently joined, because I'm already a member.
I went
to one of their meetings, and I was thinking I'd be the odd atheist out. And I don't know if you met Rosalind, if you've met Rosalind before she went to China.
Yeah.
That's where we met, and she was going there intending to be the odd atheist out as well.
Uh-huh.
And we go there and we like, hey, I'm an atheist, and this is what I know about some of the weird mystical stuff that allegedly goes on in the Puget Sound area. And Rosalind's like, you're an atheist too, and then we're friends now.
This sounds a bit like the scene from Fight Club where Edward Norton's character is going to support groups for diseases that he doesn't have.
Yes.
And he starts spotting somebody else going to these meetings too, and he becomes really insecure about being a faker. So, I mean, that sort of awkwardness is always sort of in the air. Do you ever worry, Darren, that someone is going to go, hey, what's this guy doing here? And has it created any awkward situations?
There has been some awkward situations. A lot of times they will, tell you what to say if you're greeting someone. They'll tell you to turn around and say, you know, that welcome, you know, to the house of Jesus or just whatever. And I don't take part in that. When they'll say something, the religious thing that the pastor has told them to say to me, and I will just say, you know, hi, I'm Darren. So
welcome to the International House of Jesus. That just occurred to me. I don't know.
It has about as many different franchises.
But so far, it sounds like it's been very positive. They've just been basically giving you a booster shot of the local lingo so you can get by and not be really awkward, or is that...
Yeah, I don't know if they would be offended if they knew I was an atheist or not, but I don't try to pretend I'm a believer. They do communion, and I sit through it. I don't take part in that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Do you think you might be alone in that? Do you think that everyone except for you is just really diehard?
And you might notice with communion.
Do you ever get little senses of doubt from anybody watching this?
I don't know if there's other people like me who are as sure of their atheism as I am, but I'm sure that there are, probably most of them have some bit of doubt. I don't think anyone really is 100% sold on their beliefs.
That's a good point. I don't think many people are either. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we get back, we're going to talk about more about Darren's church adventures, especially his recent trip to Mars Hill.
Come to this year's Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference, March 30th through April 1st at Renton Technical College in Renton, Washington. Speaking at the conference is Richard Dawkins, Professor Emeritus of Biology at Oxford, author of many books including The Magic of Reality, and well-known to the atheist community as one of the Four Horsemen. Also speaking is friend of the show and author of Attack of the Theocrats, Sean Faircloth. The cast of Ask an Atheist will be making an appearance and recording an episode in front of a live audience. For more information, visit nwfreethoughtalliance.org.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
If you long to escape the religious bias on your television, if you love scientific shows, if you think that funny and thought-provoking are not mutually exclusive, then we'd like to welcome you to a network made with you in mind. Secular Video Network is an online source for free-thinking programs. We feature a range of videos from Mr. D.D., The Thinking Atheist, and Richard Dawkins. While watching, you can participate in our live chat for engaging discussions. There is no cost, there is no proselytizing, just non-stop thought-provoking shows. So visit us at secularvideonetwork.com.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
This is Ask an Atheist on Clay 11 80 AM, 253-584-1480. And we're talking to Darren about his church adventure, or his church spotting, if you will.
Yeah, Darren, you've been popping from church to church over the last few weeks. You've, as you said in the right before the break, you really like a church that puts on a show. But today, you were telling us earlier that you went to crazy mega church Mars Hill.
Well, I went to the Federal Way extension of Mars Hill. There's a few hundred people there, and it was a good time. There, Pastor Mark Driscoll has a lot of odd beliefs. He will say some strange things. I'm sure you've heard about his. I'm not sure if you discussed it on the show. The masturbation being a form of homosexuality.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, we did talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was a fun sermon that he gave, and he also offered up a really odd thing where he said, especially if you do it in front of a mirror watching yourself. And I'm like, whoa, nobody was talking about that.
TMI, Mark. TMI.
Yeah, whoa, dude, Mark. He's really well known. He wrote an op-ed, I believe, in the Seattle Times talking about how the movie Avatar was satanic.
Yeah.
He is a weird dude, and he's got a lot of hang-ups about sexuality.
And he's got several churches. There's a church up in, there's one in, I believe, Fedway. There's a church in Seattle. And then, like, one in,
like in, it's like in another state. It's like
in
Nevada,
New Mexico. Or
New Mexico.
Like
and they all just watch him on the big screen.
Really?
They claim to have their own pastors, but their own pastor kind of introduces the video that they're going to be showing and then sums it up.
So it's sort of the Vanna Whites of Mars Hill, if you will.
The Jack Perkins.
The Jack Perkins. Very good.
That he just introduces the movie and comes on during commercial breaks.
Right.
So you're not even seeing the real pastor. You're watching him on the screen like he's the great leader.
Yeah, every now and then you get the feeling that he can see you, but then you remember that it's just a recording of him from weeks earlier.
So would you say the magic happening feeling that you've noticed at churches, is it there at Mars Hill because it's all arbitrated through a TV screen, or is it a little different?
It's a little different. There wasn't a lot of magic happening. There was a couple right in front of me that I thought were doing something that was pretty funny. Each of them appeared to be becoming filled in the spirit. And it started out with the guy raising his hands a little bit, and then the girl, when she noticed that, she seemed to try to outdo him a little bit and get a little bit more intense. And then I got the feeling that when he saw that, then he started like making a fist in the air, and he was doing a little bit of marching around to the music. And then when she saw that, then she started really getting into it with her hands just shaking like uncontrollably, like she was, you know, going.
So they were amping each other up.
Yeah, it was nice to watch. I was just sitting there taking notes.
Did you ever feel the possible temptation to try to top them?
No, not at all.
Because, I don't know, I have to admit, there's a little troll inside of me that's saying, I wonder how crazy I can make these people act.
And I have a question. I can't say it's a very articulate question, but it's a question I always like to ask. Have you seen Glossolalia now? Have people spoken in tongues in front of you?
I have not seen it since I've been an atheist going to church, and I am looking for it. So if anyone knows a big church around the Tacoma area that does it, I would love to view that.
But but when you were a believer, you saw it, though, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw it a lot.
And what's that like?
Even when I was a believer, I would go to Assemblies of God churches where they would do it, and it just seems silly.
I remember when they were talking about it in Jesus Camp, where they kind of forced themselves into it because they feel like it's socially required of them. Of all of the religious stuff that I've seen, the glossolalia thing is one of the things that just baffles
me. The thing that I think is happening is I think that everyone kind of feels that everyone else is having like this natural speaking in tongues experience, so the next person kind of fakes it. And I think that it's actually just everyone faking it because they think everyone should speak in tongues. It's...
Okay, I understand there is some brain structure that sort of generates it, but they are forcing themselves into it, is what you're saying.
Oh yeah, I mean it's more no different than like chanting or anything, you know.
Oh, okay,
because we are naturally a social species. I mean, if you doubt that, go into a large auditorium and cough and see how many other people cough.
Oh yeah, yeah, yawning,
all sorts of things. I mean, actually the vomit reflex as well. That if you throw up in front of someone, notice you'll see another couple other people gag a little bit.
Ah, for me it's smell.
Yeah, smell will do it.
Yeah.
But I think it's sort of it. So Darren, in a lot of ways, you're the most honest guy in that room.
There's certainly no one more honest than me. I would imagine there may be someone who
nice and modest.
I mean, there may be someone who believes 100%. I don't believe 100%, so.
What are you talking about? We're the most modest people ever. We are so modest.
That is the most hyperbolous sentence ever.
We think so little of ourselves. We are awesome at thinking very little of ourselves. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's what I find so weird. Darren, you were a believer at some point, so if you look at this stuff now and knew that at one point in your past you were one of those people in the pews, do you ever look back at your past experiences being religious differently now that you're looking at through an atheist lens?
Well, it does affect... When I was younger and... a believer, I did believe that other people believed it 100%, and I believed that most people did, and I would, there were lots of parts in the Bible that I didn't agree with, and I would pray, you know, to help me believe 100% like everyone I see around me.
Right.
And I now believe that other people are not 100%. Other people are also praying to help for God to help them believe.
And that's traditionally been the case. That's a lot of people seem to think that apologetics is religious people arguing with non-religious people. But apologetics was originally to keep the faithful faithful. It was for people. It was for adherents of that religion when they would fall away from faith, as they say.
Shout down the doubt.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the thing that I just find so fascinating about this. Do you ever have this weird fear when you walk into this room? Because this is a group of people that probably see each other every week, so they can spot a sore thumb, you know, if, you know, well, this guy's new. Do you ever worry about being outed as a faker?
Well, not a faker. I don't think I'm faking anything when I'm there. But every now and then it does cross my mind that... that they will notice that I'm an atheist. And then there's been a couple times where I get the feeling that at any point someone is going to point at me and start doing some weird scream, like at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I'm surrounded by these pod people. But that hasn't happened yet. So,
so you were saying that you've been specifically looking for a church that does glossolalia. What other sorts of churches are you, have you been looking for?
Just anything that I'm really not that familiar with. Anything where, like, I heard about Driscoll, so I wanted to go see his nonsense in person, so to speak, even though I was just watching him on the screen.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I find so, so interesting about this, is that, Darren, I know that a lot of times religious people will throw out this argument that people like Sam and myself just aren't willing to look at the truth, that we're not familiar with religion, and if we would just go to church, that our atheist, you know, evil selves would just melt away into the loving, hot, white light of Christ if
our hearts would grow three sizes too large, as it were.
Exactly. It would be like the end of a sitcom where the person's like, I've been so bad, and then there's a group hug. Have you had that experience? I mean, what do you say to people who say that? I mean, you're obviously a regular churchgoer now.
Well, from my experience, you know, I became a believer and stopped believing because I read the Bible, you know. So there's, for me, I think the likelihood of me going back to my belief now is, it's just not going to happen. It's about the same chances that, say, like Jane Goodall becoming a chimpanzee because she was, you know, observing chimpanzees.
Very nice. So the Mars Hill Church was recently in The Stranger, I believe, where it was basically described as a cult.
Yeah, that a lot of times, and I know that a lot of times the word cult would get thrown around basically at any organization that you don't like. But I think it really applies here. The level of control.
One of the things that they were noted as doing in the article, if I remember properly, is that they love bomb people. So when a new person shows up, they sort of act in an immunological response and try and get that person really happy to be there and into it.
Join us!
Wow, that was scary. Did you experience any of that?
I have not thus far experienced it. I don't know if it's some sort of vibe I'm putting out.
Okay.
Or I've actually been the person who loved bomb people before when I was religious, but I have not yet been love bombed.
Now I'm left with what's that like again? What is it?
It's pretty fake.
Okay, so you just sort of pretend
to be their best friend until they become a regular, and then you move on to the next new person.
Wow.
Wow, that's very James Bondian.
Yeah, I mean, because when a new person shows up at sort of an atheist gathering, I like to come up and say, how are you doing? Make sure that they're not feeling creeped out, as occasionally happens when it's the first time in an entirely new social dynamic. But I'm not trying to, like, get them to stay. I just want them to be comfortable. And I like to think that I'm genuine when I think that's really what I'm trying to do. I mean, to have a functional social community is important to me, but it's not, I'm not faking it. I'm not trying to make them feel like the most important person in the world.
Now, thankfully, from atheist groups, at least that I've been a part of, we don't do the second half of what love bombing is there to do, as Rich Lyons, our friend from Living After Faith, has told us, which is that you also can threaten to retract that love.
Yeah, that's true.
You can pull back that sense of community when somebody does something you don't like, and you make somebody afraid to lose that social connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's actually something Mars Hill does a lot of. They actually make you sign these creepy contracts and give you a church authority over you. I mean, nothing legally binding, but...
I did hear you can't even quit that church once you become a member.
No, it's...
Oh, because that's legal.
No, it's not legal at all. but it doesn't stop them from trying. I think that the social pressure sometimes is enough to force somebody to do that. So I guess the question is, how long do you see yourself doing this for the foreseeable future?
For the foreseeable future, it's right now it's really interesting. I don't feel guilty if I don't go, you know, so, or if I'm not feeling well, or if there's a game on that I want to watch, I'm not going to go, but I've got nothing to do.
Would you encourage other people to do this?
I would encourage... If you're an atheist and you're very sure of your atheism, then yeah. If you're an atheist because you think it's cool,
avoid it.
Yeah, because you'll probably get talked into it.
Don't do anything because you think it's cool, kids. Just say no.
So news or emails, you think?
Let's hit some news. There's just so much good stuff.
So there's a new segment we're going to be starting up, and it's about politics, because as I don't know if you've noticed, but it's kind of a weird election year out there. And it's mostly a GOP dominated one, and we don't take sides in these sort of political battles, but this one's pretty oddly Christian.
It is so Christian.
And we've got a quote from somebody. I think is he the pardon?
Yeah, this is actually from Rick Santorum, who I believe as a last poll is the leading candidate for the GOP nomination. This is something he told students at Florida's Ave Maria University. You can probably figure out their denomination. That was founded by a hardcore right-wing Catholic. And this is what he tells young hardline Catholics.
We all know that this country was founded on a Judeo-Christian ethic, but the Judeo-Christian ethic was a Protestant Judeo-Christian ethic. Sure, the Catholics had some influence, but this was a Protestant country, and the Protestant ethic, mainstream, mainline Protestantism. And of course, we look at the shape of mainline Protestantism in this country, and it is a shambles. It is gone from the world of Christianity, as I see it.
Okay.
That was Rick Santorum back in 2008 talking at Ave Maria University.
Ave Maria University. That comes to us via MSNBC, I should add.
I don't think we should be surprised by this.
No, this is why we need to do a political segment on Ask an Atheist. This is a lie. This is a straight up lie.
It's also incredibly two-faced. Basically, you have this guy saying that Protestants are not real Christians, and that America falling apart is all the fault of Protestants because they're falling away from Christ. But this is a guy who right now is turning around and specifically trying to troll for those exact same Protestant evangelicals in a presidential election.
Yeah.
Guess what? Now that you need their vote, they're real Christians.
2008 wasn't that long ago.
Not that long ago at all. In politics, it was like last week.
Yeah.
So who's the fake Christian? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This time it's probably Mormons or Barack Obama, who he recently said is not following the Bible.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly two-faced, and it's one of those times I think we remember that the religious right is not a monolith. It's a coalition of people like him and also people on the evangelical right. And they tend to talk differently about each other when they're in closed rooms rather than when they're on Fox News.
Or when they don't think they're going to be running for president shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Or being a front runner. It's a very strange political debate out there. And he's saying that replacing the Protestant church should be the Catholic church. Recently in an article via Addicting Info, a Catholic priest allegedly told a child he was raping that this is what God's love feels like.
Oh,
this
God's is a love
very,
hurts.
This is a very weird way... The way
I really wish that was an isolated horrible thing being said by a Catholic priest.
It's becoming pretty clear that child abuse in the Catholic Church is an epidemic, and it's been an epidemic that's been going on for at least half a century.
And I really wish that this was an isolated thing, that there's just a couple priests that did this, but the response to it, the cover-up of it, the shuffling of pedophile priests off to basically fresh meat victims seems to be absolutely systemic, because the response, regardless of where it happens in the world, is exactly the same.
Yeah. And I have to point out again that when the world gets anti-Catholic, it gets anti-Catholic against both the believers and the clergy and the laity. And that's not what's happening here. Catholics in America tend to favor gay marriage, tend to favor birth control. They seem to be people that like people and are acting morally. But the clergy is another thing entirely.
Yeah, this is all aiming completely at the clergy here. This is one, and deservedly so, because they have acted abhorrently when finding out that for the past few decades, their priests, their employees, have been raping their parishioners' children.
Yeah.
And then they play the victim as if, how dare you say this horrible thing about our priests?
I wanted to spend more time on this, but the calls got interesting today, so we had to do it very quickly. I will be addressing this on the blog a little bit later this week, I think. And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Mike Gillis and Darren Garvin. Our music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. Our production assistants were Rebecca Friedman and Scott Wilson. Post show is at Doyle's. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. Contact us online at askanatheist.tv or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv.
And, hey, tomorrow happens to be Sam's birthday, so drop by Doyle's, buy him a beer.
See you next time.